So we all love traveling, and I can't remember if I said this in today's classic episode, but I got really, really close to making it to Antarctica once before my operation went bust. One day, we'll go there, hopefully as a group. And in today's classic episode, we ask, what will people find beneath the South Pole?
What are we talking? Ancient artifacts of a civilization? Are we talking a cave system that leads down into the depths where the others live?
Perhaps alien DNA trapped in ice cores?
Mm-hmm. Maybe ancient monuments or pyramids. This is a question that is fascinating, but it also leads to some troubling implications.
All right, so travel with us. Here we go.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
I'm Ben, and we are here, as always, with our super producer, Noel, the Iceman Brown.
Hey, Noel. So, everybody, just off on the top here, just wanted to let you know, I got a vaccine, a Tdap.
What's a Tdap specifically?
It is supposed to help you out with tetanus, diphtheria, and whooping cough. And there's a specific reason that you need to get this vaccine that is happening in my life. It's pretty awesome. And anyway, I seem to be having some kind of reaction that is not usually what's supposed to happen when you get this vaccine. I had a fever of 101.7.
Mm-hmm.
And just been sweating my butt off.
Kind of out of it. Feel like your brain is sort of wrapped in cotton.
A bit, yeah.
So, yeah, I remember you were telling me that about 1 in 100 people have a reaction that you're having.
Well, okay, I can't say with authority that that is true. I was told by a gentleman on the elevator of this building yesterday after I was, because he happened to get on the elevator while I was moving my arm around, because the injection site is on your upper arm, and it's very, very sore. And there's about a 24-hour period where your arm is supposed to hurt. And, you know, I was awkwardly moving my arm around when he got on the elevator, and he was like, ooh, would you get a vaccine? Like, I said, yes. It really hurts. He's like, what kind? Told him it was a Tdap. And he's like, ooh, man, you know, there's about a 1 in 100 chance that you're going to get a fever like I did. And I was like, what? Got home. Guess what? It manifested. I don't know if that dude cursed me. Maybe he did.
Maybe, maybe he incepted you somehow.
I don't know.
Well, this guy, Matt, if you were to describe him to someone, would you describe him as a doctor?
I couldn't say.
Okay.
I believe he lives in this building, but who knows? There are all kinds of different and amazing people that live here, and some that aren't so amazing.
This building is huge.
Yes.
There are people that no one else knows lives here, right?
Yep.
In the nooks, the crannies, the unexplored areas of this gargantuan thing. And today we are talking about unexplored gargantuan things. Now, guys, we hope that you appreciate this show because Matt has pushed himself a little bit closer and closer to that death's door to podcast
this
today.
This is so dangerous for me to do this right now. Oh.
Well, at first I thought that was a single tear coming out of your eye, but it appears to be blood.
It's blood and sweat and maybe a tear.
So, oh man, that's kind of cool. I can respect that.
Cool.
So we're going to get through this episode to tell you some exciting stuff. Before, hopefully, my co-host and producer, Matt the Madman Frederick, it's your nickname for today, passes away into the great beyond.
Oh, man. All right. Cool. Let's get through this then.
No pressure. Let's just make this the best one.
All right.
So I, by way of an introduction, and Matt, I'm joking, right? You'll be fine? I don't know.
Sure. I thought I would be over it much faster than this. So maybe I'm just on a downward spiral. We'll find out.
Well, it's cool, man. A little delirium always helps a show.
Yes.
The time I didn't sleep.
That was great. That was my favorite episode we've made so far.
Really? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is going to be the new favorite.
Okay.
So there's this book that I really enjoy called The Atlas of Remote Islands. And, for everyone who is a book lover in the audience, and there's nothing wrong with not being a book lover because a lot of books are terrible. Let's face it.
There are so many out there now.
I mean, we're not paid to be someone's English teacher. We don't have to pretend that every book is amazing. The world is just lousy with books that, you know, are not going to be your favorites. That doesn't mean that they themselves are objectively bad. It just means they're not for you.
That's right.
And every so often you run into something on the other side of the spectrum, a book that is so amazing that you can't even hold on to it because you continually give it to other people saying, oh, I want you, please check this out. This reminds me of you or whatever you say.
It kind of becomes a part of your worldview almost.
Almost, yeah. And the Atlas of Remote Islands, which is more of a travel log than an actual atlas, it's just this book of 50 different very small islands and a small 1-2 paragraph story about their history. And while I was reading this book, at least the first time, what I became really captivated by were the islands in the southern hemisphere, not just, you know, the scattering, sparsely populated tiny islands in the oceanic area, but also, and even more so, the inhospitable, barren places. The closer you get to Antarctica, the more it seems as though the natural world is telling you, turn back.
Yes.
You know, and that's what we're talking about today. We are talking about Antarctica, the most mysterious continent.
That's right. Let's get to some of the facts. So Antarctica is the fifth largest continent in the world. It's roughly twice the size of Australia, which, you know, Australia's pretty big, everybody. So that's a lot of ice-covered lands. It's home to 70% of the world's freshwater supply and 90% of the world's freshwater ice. And this place is really cool. It's currently the coldest and the windiest continent. It also possesses the highest average elevation of any continent, which is crazy. That just means it's full of those mountains.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing. Yeah, because 98% of the landmass of Antarctica is covered with ice. And if it didn't have the highest average elevation, if it did not have those mountains, then it would probably be 100% covered with ice. Well, maybe 99 or something, but just because there'd still be some land on the coast. In some places, Matt, this ice is 3 miles thick.
Jeez.
So, to paraphrase so many horror movies, what lay beneath?
Ooh.
We know relatively little about this. And this week, we looked at what people might find beneath the ice if it all melted away. The ice in Antarctica comes in two large categories. There's the Western Sheet, there's the Eastern Sheet. It extends all across the land like some curse in a medieval fairy tale, and also into the surrounding ocean. So what we'd like to do is talk a little bit about some of the fringe theories and some of the concepts that you will hear related to Antarctica. And it touches on so many other things, some of which we've covered before, and a couple of which I would consider our greatest hits or some of my favorite stories.
Yes, and one of those is climate change. This is one that really gets our audience riled up one way or the other. And you know what? I'm in a state at this point, Ben. I'm just going to say it. Climate change is real. This stuff's getting out of hand, and we're all going to die.
Well, of course, climate change is real because climates change over time.
Man-made climate change is real. It's our fault, and we're screwed.
Yeah, the Anthropocene, right? It's an interesting thing. You can always, I don't know, I think it's so clever what people do in the sorts of televised debates where it's, they do the thought terminating cliche thing. Let's call it climate change. Like now, as we're recording this week, one of the big things are, the big things in international affairs would be, the Iranian nuclear deal. And everyone's like, nuclear deal, nuclear deal, nuclear deal. But you have to dig yourself to find the exact details. You have to go onto the internet and search. The mainstream news is not really telling the details of stuff. And you know what else? Just while I'm on a rant here, and this is just going to be so brief. Look, I understand when people get very, very emotional and angry about their opinion or what they see as the facts, right? When someone, because we get letters all the time when someone says, well, climate change, you know, again, another buzzword, right? Because what we're talking about is much more intricate, much more widespread.
Yeah, very specific things that are occurring.
Right, exactly. Ocean acidification, stuff like that. Things that have been proven.
Yes, rising sea levels.
Right, right. And people were really arguing over the degree of it and the cause of it, but just throwing buzzwords at people kind of hacks the brain to get past the cognitive ability and straight into the primitive reptile brain stuff, where all of a sudden the person who believes climate change is not man-made, or believes, you know, that some great lizard messiah is going to emerge from a volcano beneath the ocean, whatever. I'm saying it doesn't matter what people believe. It matters how you believe and how you support that belief. And it makes me just somewhere between derisively amused and incredibly sad when I see people get super, super emotional about a thing and think that, you know, if I yell at this person enough, if I am just angry enough, then it'll matter. And then at that point, you have to ask yourself, are you trying to persuade that person, or are you just trying to, like, get caught up in a pitchfork party?
Yeah, or are you trying to express your belief hard enough, or reinforce your belief by yelling?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a, ooh, we should look at those psychological phenomenon, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one little bit of inside baseball here. That's one show that I pitched for Brain Stuff. It's another show I do. And they, after we discussed it with the production team and stuff, they didn't want me to do this episode, but it was Why You Can't Win an Argument on the Internet. And,
that's a great episode.
Well, thanks. Why don't we do it?
Yeah. Let's do it.
But okay. So aside from that rant there, the forces of climate change clearly have impacted the planet and are continuing apace. And we'll talk a little bit now about the thing you were about to bring up, because you can't talk about Antarctica without talking about ice, and you can't talk about large amounts of ice without talking about climate change, right?
Yeah. So with climate change, we're talking about several things that really are happening. Like I kind of mentioned earlier, sea levels really are rising, and they're going to rise more in the future, or at least they are projected to do so. Now, you might also hear people claiming that Antarctica loses ice at some times and then it gains it back at other times, but there's a little bit of a discrepancy there.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing, this whole idea, hinges on a bit of a misunderstanding. Think of ice in Antarctica as coming in two different types. So you've got your land ice and you've got your sea ice. Now, the sea ice itself is seasonal. It grows in the winter as it gets colder. Then it recedes just a little bit in as it gets warmer.
Or, I mean, it can disappear almost completely over summer, but it's still always there. It just, it's kind of like a, if I could make a bad comparison, it's kind of like a person who maybe gains and loses weight very easily. They have variations of weight.
Yeah. There's a range. There's essentially a range of weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ice that Antarctica takes on during the winter.
Antarctica gets some water weight. Okay.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. But like you were saying, there's a different kind of ice, right?
Yeah. The land ice is very different. This stuff, it accretes slowly over time, and here's the problem, is disappearing. Now, you have to imagine that the ice that's on land, as it is melting, it's increasing the amount of water, of liquid water that's in the seas.
Right, because the amount of frozen water already in the sea is part of the volume of the oceans.
Absolutely, the sea ice that we were talking about.
So let's advance this further, because there are probably some people who are already saying, no, you totally don't get it. Well, we have a plot twist here that a lot of people might not be aware of. This change in land ice cannot be attributed solely to a changing climate. For instance, look at Thwaites Glacier. It's this large, rapidly changing outlet of the West Antarctic ice sheet, and it's being eroded by the ocean, sure, of course, but it's also being melted by a different thing.
Yeah, from below, from the geothermal heat that's being forced up through it. And that to me, Ben, presents a whole nother issue.
Yeah, whole nother boxcar of badgers.
Yes, the boxcar badgers that are heating up the earth from the inside. What's going on, Ben?
A whole nother boot of birds. Bag of cats.
The bird boots?
Yeah. Can of chinchillas. I could do this all day. Sorry. Okay, so yeah, that you can check out the study by researchers at the Institute for Geophysics at the University of Texas at Austin, or UTIG for those of you who love an acronym, and that is in a journal called the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So they found that despite the popular debate, as usually happens, there are other factors at play, and it's not just a yes or no thing. It turns out that geothermal heat is changing the nature of the continent. And one thing we should say about Antarctica, the history of Antarctica that's just amazing, is it's only been an ice-covered continent for about 35 million years, which sounds a bit long in the tooth for us, but in the grand scheme of things, that's a bad weekend, right? Yeah. And it could totally come back. It used to be a subtropical thing that looked a lot like the modern day Pacific Northwest for anyone who's been there. Cool, beautiful place.
Yeah.
People still aren't sure what happened 35 million years ago, because apparently just in the scheme of things, the way this ice crossed the land and covered the place happened very quickly. So we don't know what happened, and we don't know exactly how Antarctica works, for lack of a better phrase.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not for a lack of trying, though. The human species has set up research facilities across the land in a couple places. You know, one of the things that I found really interesting was who owns Antarctica.
Yes.
And when you look online, you can find the maps of the segments that Antarctica, the way it's split up, because it goes from the South Pole or the South Pole.
Or the magnetic South Pole.
Yeah, I think it's the ceremonial South Pole.
You're talking about the Antarctic Treaty, right?
Yes.
Signed in Washington in December of 1959 by 12 countries who the people who signed it were just the 12 countries whose scientists have been futzing around down there. They were active during what's called the International Geophysical Year of 57 to 58.
But it's really cool. It looks like a pie chart. Almost.
Yeah. With all the flags arranged around it. Yeah. The treaty itself is something that, we can talk about in detail. Do you want to do it now or do you want to do it later? We can do either.
We can do it later. Let's do it later.
Either way.
I'm sorry. I kept imagining who actually gets to study which parts and if you're going to get different research on the northeastern side that's very different from the research you get on the southwestern side.
Oh, you mean if there's like a good neighborhood of Antarctica?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I imagine if you're a biologist, that answer is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it depends on your field of study, right?
Sure.
You know, a while ago, there was an expedition that you and I had talked about a few years back. Actually, we should get into that later.
Okay.
Sorry, spoiler alert. Anyway, just to sew it up, geothermal energy. If human beings build permanent settlements on the continent of Antarctica and get rid of the ice. And yes, before the emails come in, by permanent settlement, I mean like a nation state or colony. I don't mean a research center, which is a beautiful thing, but does not a country make. And if people ended up actually living in Antarctica, if we're going to be nationalistic, the USAA.
Yes.
Wait, I think that's already an insurance company.
insurance.
Yeah, USAA just buys Antarctica or some other large corporation. Google owns Antarctica. So anyway, these people could easily end up powering their society by geothermal energy, which sounds like science fiction, but is totally possible.
I am now imagining a country that goes through and just burrows through the 3 miles of ice, makes giant walls to keep the ice away, and then has a civilization that's kind of surrounded by these ice walls.
Oh, right. Living inside the walls of the canyon, similar to the Native American groups.
Yeah.
So the thing is, it's not science fiction. It's happening now, just in a different country.
Oh.
Iceland, not the big ice walls, but Iceland.
Yes, yeah.
Iceland derives the majority of its power from geothermal energy. So it's completely possible. But it's also true that the nuances of the Antarctic climate or the long-term effects are still largely – there's still some questions to answer just because this geothermal stuff is relatively recent, at least our understanding of it. And the effects of this, the long-term effects, kind of anybody's guess, we still don't exactly know, you know, what happened 35 million years ago. We're catching up. We're like people who started watching Seinfeld today.
Oh, no.
I'm kidding.
Oh, but there's so much to learn, though, at least. There's so much to enjoy.
Yeah, okay. In that case, the comparison holds. I'm just a little bit sour about it because, you know, I had never really watched a lot of that stuff. And then I just started watching it. I'm still in that moment where I realized that all four of the main characters' problems could be solved by having a cell phone.
Oh, wow.
It's true.
They were able to just communicate immediately.
It seems like a lot of the things are based on
timing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Herald structure in improv or something.
Oh, that's why. Oh, my gosh, Ben. I never thought about that before. That's huge.
Is it? I'm sure that somebody else has
I'm
thought about that.
Sure, I'm sure, but. Oh, wow. Thank you.
I went to New York and saw the, not for this thing, but you know, I was traveling and, as you know, Matt, we saw the, Seinfeld apartment, and it was just something that, TV company made to, as a recreation, but I was startled that so many people liked the show. There were people around the block, down the street to a different street. It is very crazy. I don't know if it was just the neighborhood or if it's that popular.
It was a big deal. My parents liked it a lot.
I'm going to feel strange if I ever have to meet Seinfeld.
Jerry.
Jerry Seinfeld, Larry David. If I ever have to meet them, because I guess I'll just be like, hey, guys, I understand your show is quite popular. And
I don't think we're ever going to meet those
congratulations.
Guys.
Who knows? They might be listening now.
Yeah.
Anyhow, tangents abound in this episode. Let's move to one of the let's cut straight to the chase. One of the episodes we did early on in our career together, Nazis in the Hollow Earth.
Yes, the idea that perhaps there is a civilization that exists below the crust of the earth, and as crazy as it sounds, that there is some type of inner star that powers the civilization beneath us. And there's a powerful civilization that the Nazis at least thought, perhaps a small group of the Nazis thought could come out from the bowels of the earth and help them win their battles.
Because as the National Socialists, or these factions of the National Socialists, aka Nazis today, as they knew with a strange and mystic religious certitude, these denizens of the inner world were also totally Aryan.
Yeah, totally. And down for the cause.
Right. And cared about what was happening.
Oh, yeah.
In these political maneuvers. So what we did find with that, and you can check out our video on the topic, is that it is true. You know, that stuff you see on the History Channel can be often disingenuous, but it is true that factions of the Nazi Party had an intense belief in the occult, which we've talked about with the Annenberg.
The Annenberg, the Thule Society.
Right, yeah. And the belief in Vril and trying to reconstruct this new mythology. And there really were government-financed quests to find things like these hidden mystical lands like Shambhala, Shangri-La, and
or in the case of Antarctica, an entrance to the underworld.
Yes, yeah. And there was actually a plan to colonize part of Antarctica as a means of expanding the German whaling industry at the time. And that leads to...
At least supposedly,
yeah, right, in New Schwabia. But as we learn, and as you can see, if you look into some of the historical documents available, no one found any entrance. And that's not to say there's not an extensive possible cave system in Antarctica.
I would say there most definitely is, just because of the ice melting over time and then refreezing, the melting and refreezing.
And the way caves form.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there might be something there, but we have, at this point, we have little evidence of, we know a little bit about what kind of life might be there, but we know very little about it. We do also have another thing that we should bring up, and I think we did an episode on this too, Matt, this belief in the National Socialist Nazi Party exploring and attempting to take over Antarctica ties in with a little known story in U.S. history as well, right?
Ah, Operation High Jump, you say?
Yes.
Where we chased them, or we at least followed the Nazis down towards Antarctica.
Let's do the movie version of it. How would you say if you were pitching the movie version of Operation High Jump, Matt, how would you pitch it to me?
Okay.
Like we're in the elevator.
I've got 5 seconds before we get to the next one.
Yeah, I'll help you pitch too. Let's say Noel is who's a good director? Who's a director that you really
Noel.
Like? Well, other than Noel, he has to be someone else.
Oh, he has to be someone else. Yeah. Let's go with
Michael Bay.
No.
Oh.
I mean, I could see him being able to sell this movie though.
Right.
Oh God. Yeah, let's do Bay. He can sell this.
Okay, so if we were pitching Operation High Jump to Michael Bay, what would we say?
All right, this is how we go.
All right.
Sup, Bay. So check this out. I got this idea for a movie. Think United States military. Navy, giant ships, right? Then you got Nazi ships too, right? So there's one section, Nazi ships, United States Navy, other ships heading towards Antarctica, right? Then they get into these battles. We're going to make them get into battles because we need explosions, right?
Boom.
Right, Bay? Okay. So what else, Ben?
Oh, this is good. I think he would go, all right, stop. You have me explosions.
And naval ships.
Now, can these ships transform? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he do Battleship? I can't remember.
I don't remember who did Battleship. Was it Oliver Stone?
Oh, God. I don't think so.
No. All right. Yeah. It's if we were doing that in a world kind of intro, we could tell some great stories about Operation High Jump. The thing is, they would not be the truth. WikiLeaks has been involved in bringing
up. Strangely enough.
Bringing up some documents related to the activities at the time. So first, let's talk about what Operation High Jump actually was supposed to be. It was led by a guy named Richard E. Byrd. He was a Rear Admiral of the U.S. Navy, and their mission was to establish a research base, their official mission, with the charming name of Little America 4.
Nice.
Little America 4. That's got to be look interesting on a postcard, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so according to the official naval report, at least, they had objectives. They had 6 objectives. The second of those was this idea of consolidating and extending sovereignty over as much of Antarctica as they could.
Makes sense. That's what we do.
That's what people in general seem to be quite fond of. But the WikiLeaks reports seem to prove that the underlying motivation for this was not so much the National Socialist Party, but the Soviet Party, the USSR, because Operation High Jump occurred in 46 and 47. So that would be after World War II.
Yeah, right at the tail end.
Mm-hmm, right after World War II has concluded. And the reason, the theory that we've often heard is that, well, Nazis regrouped to a secret place in New Swabia, and Operation High Jump was part of a secret war, a secret atomic war or something. But what it seems to be more of is more evidence that immediately after World War II, the Cold War began.
Yeah. Even before it ended.
Right.
Really.
Right. Even before it ended. And there are different, interpretations of that. I'll probably go on to Facebook and Twitter where you can follow us at Conspiracy Stuff.
And drop
the links for anybody who wants to check out more, at least of what WikiLeaks has to say regarding Operation High Jump. Now we get to one of the most exciting things. The most exciting thing about this stuff, people found fossils into Antarctica. So
yeah.
The ice melts.
What else are we going to find? What other kind of life is going to be there? Living life or just more fossils?
Well, we know that all the fossils that have been found so far, at least all the big ones, when you're thinking of, you know, large flora and fauna, dinosaurs, I'll just say it, dinosaurs, what kind of weird dinosaurs are we going to find? And maybe we'll find a dinosaur civilization. All the fossils we found so far, the majority are from margins of coastal islands, exposed mountain rock places, because those are the few places that don't have like miles of ice over them. And because the continent was not always so cold, because it was a subtropical climate for so long, we know that there had to be an abundance of life. I was looking for the right word that didn't have a curse word in it. So during the Cretaceous period, it did enjoy a warmer, lusher climate. And that Cretaceous period started 144 million years ago. It ended 65 million years ago.
Wow.
And those fossils are pretty exciting. Just the few things we've seen. And scientists have identified a handful of dinosaur species that they think are, you know, if not uniquely Antarctic, have been identified at least as something that would have lived in Antarctica, not just like single animal, but that indicates a larger population. However, what you said just then was by far the most exciting thing.
What?
We might not just be looking for relics of life gone by. We may find living things, life in action, yeah?
Yeah, and who knows the size of these things. It would probably be much smaller, micro-level life, or even
bacteria.
You know, maybe a little bit larger than that, because there are other places that we can kind of point to that are somewhat like Antarctica, and there is this one place in particular that we know of might hold these things or these keys. And it's already been looked at a bit. It's this place that you may have heard of called Lake Vostok. It's this pristine freshwater lake that's buried 2.5 miles below solid ice. That's 3.7 kilometers, by the way.
For everyone outside of Namibia and the U.S. Oh, wait, and Myanmar. Those are the three countries.
It's about the size of Lake Ontario, one of the Great Lakes here in the U.S., and it's the largest of the more than 200 liquid lakes that are strewn across Antarctica.
Right, yes. Beneath that ice, there is more than simply stone and fossils and dead things.
Mountains, yeah. There's lakes, man. Freshwater lakes.
Mm-hmm, that are liquid. And what we've learned is that these lakes are created when, again, the geothermal heat, the energy from Earth's core, melts the bottom of the ice sheet. This is maybe counterintuitive to some folks, but the thick blanket of ice on top acts as insulation. These lakes don't get out much.
No, they don't. They just kind of, they're happy. They like the quiet life.
And that's perhaps why they've been isolated for hundreds of thousands to millions of years. And when something's isolated that long, if you're familiar with the evolution, the creepy, in my opinion, the creepy evolution of cave-dwelling creatures.
Oh, yeah.
Then you know that hundreds of thousands, well, more millions of years gives creatures space to adapt.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, as you can assume, scientists are really excited to get into these lakes like Lake Vostok and really do as much research as possible, go as deep as you can into the lake and just explore it as much as possible. Can you imagine being a scientist and discovering perhaps even a new type of life at the bottom of one of these lakes?
I'd be like the academic version of Kanye West.
You could drop all the mics.
I would be yelling at people at meetups for readings. I would interrupt people's presentations on their findings.
Even if you found microbial life, right? But what if you found something bigger in one of those lakes?
So scientists have raced to collect water samples from Lake Vostok. And this was relatively controversial because what we are essentially doing when we do something like that is that we are breaking the seal on something ancient, right?
Yeah.
And going through here, what the scientists found was they found life. They found living things in there. And to me, that's kind of, well, it's beautiful. I choose to interpret it as beautiful rather than ominous. But you're right, Matt. They found bacteria, but they found more than that, too.
Yeah, they found over 100 multicellular species, which is, that's huge. They even found some species that are generally associated with mollusks and fish. And there was even one researcher who I think said, well, with all these findings, we might even have fish in there somewhere. And then he very quickly was like, okay, well, maybe not fish. All right.
Right. Cause it's so difficult to present scientific findings to the general public. Well, I would say it's not difficult to present this stuff to the general public because there's this great error that people often make about quote unquote the general public, the quotidian, the common man.
Sure.
And that is to say that a single individual is smart, but a group is stupid. Now, as convenient as that might be, as fun as it might be to read on like a very negative Hallmark card.
I've never seen that before.
The fact of the matter is that people are intelligent. And, you know, cognitively, people are similar to that old story about goldfish. Our intelligence grows to the size of its container. So who makes the container? Who frames the debate? It's not that scientists will report something and everybody in the world is all of a sudden just dumb about it. No, it's that they report something, but then it is condensed and twisted into something that can be told in 2 minutes and 30 seconds before shifting to a picture of like a cat that accidentally sneezed while it farted, which I would watch.
I think
it's just a huge error to say that he had to withdraw that might have fish thing because people wouldn't understand it. But what he was probably more concerned with was someone who wants a really good headline grabbing it and running with it and saying like,
oh yeah.
Ancient, and I'm sure they did. Fish.
I don't remember seeing the headline, but I'm sure it existed.
Mm. And so we do know though that this is exciting, right? There's a great lead here. There's evidence that compels us because this is one of how many lakes? 200, you said?
Yeah, 200. And we've already found some evidence. We already know there's going to be something down there, Ben, that's going to be, oh, I don't know.
I cannot
dinosaur.
Wait.
There's going to be a dinosaur.
Yeah, I cannot wait. Ancient civilization, alien life.
A pyramid?
Let me know. A pyramid? Are you kidding me? Oh, that would be great. I don't know if it'll be, you know, if it'll happen.
No, probably not. But
probably not.
I'm going to keep hoping and, I was going to say praying, but.
Well, that's the thing though. We literally don't know. It's such an exciting thing. And often we as a species think about space, deep space as the vast unexplored territory. But this is vast unexplored territory that, you know, in a cosmic sense or cosmic scale is right next to us. We're already there. And I'm interested to see it. I'm very interested in the future of Antarctica. And I know you are too. As a matter of fact, this is one of the things that we talked about off air that would be, one of the most important coming developments. And that is who owns it.
Precisely. Who will own Antarctica in the future?
Right. Yeah. So we talked about that treaty, the Antarctic Treaty. Mm-hmm. It started out with 12 countries and now there are 52 because they would start signing the terms of it so they could send scientists down, do some research. It has a couple of very big provisions. The first one is that Antarctica shall be used for peaceful purposes only. So no nuclear bases, guys. No submarine re-ups. None of that.
I feel like that's a tough thing to enforce, but I don't know.
It's not impossible. I'm sure it's a pain in the butt. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. Just to even get a ship down there is annoying.
Well, other islands in the area that are owned by various countries mm-hmm. as research islands may not have those same stipulations. So for instance, if you're, you know, like, Queen Maud Island.
Yes.
Or, excuse me, Queen Maud Land is, part of Antarctica. But what about the islands off of that? Do they also qualify? And these are things that are answered in the treaties, but the answers, may differ at certain points in time or in territorial reckoning. Another thing is that freedom of scientific investigation in Antarctica and cooperation toward that end should continue. So if you're a scientist from the U.S. and Noel's a scientist from
Finland,
and I'm a scientist from Azerbaijan or whatever, okay. It doesn't matter, then no matter what's really going on with our countries, we should be able to cooperate as academics. And scientific observation and results from Antarctica shall be made freely available. So no keeping secrets, no saying, we've discovered the ruins of an ancient alien civilization. No one tell Greg.
Oh, you know what? We probably shouldn't tell Greg. He's just going to get so excited.
You know how he is.
He's going to start telling everybody that he found it.
He is. I wish he never started that Tumblr.
Oh,
look what I found. Tumblr.com. Yeah. So right now there is this agreement that holds, but this agreement, this treaty, is going to come under some increasing pressure as Antarctica becomes increasingly accessible, right? And important.
Mm-hmm.
Once the ice melts, what kind of mineral deposits are we looking at under there, you know?
Who's going to be – here's the crazy thing. Mm. Who's going to be worried about Antarctica when all this ice is melting? Actually, now that I think about it a little bit more, if the land ice really starts melting at an increasing rate mm-hmm. to a point where this land is livable, we're going to have to find new places for humans to live. Maybe this is the answer.
Wow.
Coastal cities can't live there anymore.
Yeah, but what's the span of time for that too?
Large span of time, but eventually mm-hmm. Antarctica might be the answer.
It might be the new neighborhood for people.
For a few million years until the next ice age.
Maybe, yeah. And that depends on, we should also talk about the poles next. But so Antarctica has the potential to become a hotspot for international competition, similar to the North Pole, where soon, probably, if you're listening to this, probably within your lifetime, there will be parts of the year where the ice at the North Pole melts to the point where ships can navigate across it, which would be tremendous for international shipping and also very dangerous for the countries involved as they negotiate peace. You know, we're talking about this off air too. Once upon a time, Alaska was called McKinley's Folly.
Yep.
Because he spent so much money on it.
Why would you buy all this?
Right. Oh. Right. And, you know, listeners who are not based in the U.S., I was thinking from this perspective when I looked at a map of the 50 U.S. states recently, and I thought, man, yeah, Alaska looks weird. Alaska looks like, how did you call that? What happened? But the idea of these poles of the world becoming new regional hotspots or new global hotspots is not as strange as it might sound. And I know that it can be tremendously controversial for people to talk about that stuff, but the fact is it's happening. People are just talking about why it's happening and what the timeline is. Mm-hmm. But to paraphrase the old opera quote, the lady has sang.
She already sang.
This is happening. There's not much people could do to bring back the ice, right?
Yeah.
Eventually it will, at least in the North Pole, it will be, navigable by water because there won't be that ice there all the year. But again, also I should probably hedge my bets there because I said in your lifetime, but we're not sure.
Yeah, we're not sure how old you are either, listener.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So I'd like anybody who studies the climate professionally to let me know your estimates. I'd love to read them on air. Oh, and speaking of corrections, we do have another one. I messed this up. I slipped when we were talking in our earlier episodes on World War III,
okay.
It was Nikita Khrushchev.
Yes.
Who gifted Crimea to Ukraine in 1954, not Stalin.
It was right after Stalin.
Yeah, it was Khrushchev. Yeah. So the last thing we should talk about here is the pole shifting.
Oh, yes.
Which came up recently on our social media, right? Here's the long story short. All the evidence indicates that every so often the magnetic poles of Earth shift. So what this means is essentially the North Pole becomes a South Pole becomes a North Pole. Most times it happens gradually. The poles start to slowly shift away from their part, and then the north that your compass points to is not the geographical north,
yes.
Right? And this is something people know if you use a compass, but other times it's just flipped, like in fresh,
like a rubber banding,
like the life of the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and his theme song.
This gets flipped, turned upside down.
Mm-hmm. I just bring this up because we're talking about the poles.
Sure.
But every so often you hear people worrying about this. This is another thing where we know that historically we're overdue for it,
yes.
But when does that date actually come due? No one knows really how to calculate it.
Well, and the effects of a pole reversal like that, it's because we're talking about the magnetosphere, mm-hmm. and you know the inner mechanics of the magnetic nature of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have all that information, Ben. About what it's going to do exactly when it happens. But it seems like the effects aren't going to be massive.
No. I think the effects will be probably the effects will probably be massive for certain migratory species that mm-hmm. depend on that reckoning to navigate the world. So
to understand which way is north.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of north, as we sew this up. Guys, I know we didn't get to everything. We're a little over our time. I just saw my buddy Kristen from Stuff Mom Never Told You walk by.
First thing we have to do, Ben, we have to do this really fast. I have to talk to Noel.
Yes.
Okay, Noel.
Yes, Matt.
I just had to talk to you.
That's okay.
I just need to hear your voice.
Are you feeling
I was feeling man? Scared. No, I'm not feeling good.
You don't look so good.
You're kind of unhinged,
you look
man.
A little like I'm sorry. No, I'm really sorry.
It's good. I just never seen you like this, man. I'm worried.
It's very strange because I'm freezing right now, but I know my internal temperature is very hot, and I've got my hoodie on. It's a horrible feeling.
He's got a hot water bottle nestled underneath his chin. Like, yeah. I mean, it's a very sad scene. Yeah.
The blood on your face. Yeah.
So funny. I was watching Mr. Robot last night, mm-hmm. and this isn't really a spoiler alert, but so he is kicking a habit. Mm-hmm. One of the characters is kicking a habit. And he's having the night sweats and going through all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it, identifying so hard with his character at that moment.
Right.
Holy crap.
Yeah. You liking the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I watched the first episode. I really enjoyed it. I need to
dive back in. I can't speak highly enough about it. The cinematography of this past episode.
I can't place that guy. I feel like I've seen him in something that I liked, but I cannot for the life of me figure out what it was.
I'm not positive either. Now I just see him as that character. All right, Ben, sorry.
No.
Well, did this this Antarctic discussion at least cool you down a little?
Oh.
No. Are you going to put in, did you just put in like a drum roll?
Yeah.
I did it with my mind.
Okay. we'll hear it in post.
Much like Antarctica, my ice is melting rapidly. Ugh.
Well, it's time to trundle you off to a sick bed.
Yeah. I think so.
Well, Noel, I have to ask. Sure. I have to ask both of you guys. Would you, given the chance, take a trip to Antarctica?
Don't they do like cruises or something?
Yeah, I got very close to sneaking aboard. I mean, not as a stowaway. One of my friend's family, she was going with them because her parents had, I don't know, retired or was their anniversary or something. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, we're going to go to Antarctica. And
wow. That sounds like a punishment, though.
It's more affordable if more people go with us. And so, you know, I'm a huge cheapskate. Yeah. So I said, how affordable is, what do you mean?
Yeah,
you and I
yeah.
might have different ideas, but I was all set to go. And then apparently, and I can only tell this story on the air because I'm not going to use the names, but apparently turned out it was more the dad's thing.
Oh.
And the wife eventually put her foot down and said, you know, this is my anniversary too. Why the hell are we going to Antarctica? What are you trying to say about our marriage? which was a nice blow, but that was my one chance to go. And there was another expedition where these guys were going to send people out to find an entrance to the Hollow Earth. And
what?
Yeah, and you could sign up online to submit your qualifications. Mm. And this was, we were working together. So,
I remember
this.
Years ago.
I never heard back from them. So guys, if you're checking out the show, let me know how it went.
We'll go on the next one if you let us.
I don't know. Maybe their Wi-Fi is not good being in the Hollow Earth and all. So Noel, what'd you think about the episode before we close out? Got anything?
No, I don't know. I have anything in particular. I think you guys were thorough as usual. I think there's some interesting things to think about.
I don't think we were, man. I think there's so much more we could do. I want to go to Antarctica, sign up on a research station, put my 2 years in or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
I want to find the thing.
You want to find the thing?
Yeah. You know, I think it's down there.
I think there's a possibility too that we talked about it. Like, could you accidentally dig too deep and resurrect some contagion or pathogen?
Yeah. Is that what possible? The thing was, by the way? What is the thing?
The thing was an alien life form that landed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay.
But it's hard to say exactly what it is.
Right.
Because you don't really see its natural shape.
It's the ambiguous title.
For a while. Yeah.
But yeah, you didn't even talk about that, a possible contagion or a viral life form that lives there.
We should do that in a future episode about a disease wiping out the earth, mm-hmm. which is one of historically one of the most dangerous disasters, right? Mm-hmm. Even more so than an earthquake.
Quick trivia question.
Yes, sir.
We can cut this if you want. It was a trivia question the other week when I was playing. Do you know the names of the two types of plague that made up the Black Plague?
Bubonic?
Yes. Bubonic plague.
And then there's the other one.
Greg's plague.
I've already forgotten what it was.
You've already forgotten what it was.
I think it was like pneumonic or something. Like
pneumonic plague?
Yeah, that's what it was. Exactly. It was the bubonic plague, and the pneumonic.
Pneumonic plague.
That sounds like a fun plague that helps you remember the bubonic plague.
Yes. On that note, well played, sir. Well played. On that note, we better get out of here before Kristen comes back for revenge. So we hope that you did enjoy this episode. Again, there's a lot of stuff we didn't get to, but we would like to hear from you with your thoughts on the future of Antarctica, any of the things we've discussed before, and any ideas you have for an upcoming episode.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.